Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, so we're in chapter 2, Vahiva Avos Hashem es Eliyahu Bitsara Hashemayim. And so again, Eliyahu is really the unique amongst all. We really can't learn from him. Nobody else ever went up to heaven in a whirlwind. It's not a. But because he's so unique, and as somebody was saying earlier, that he belongs to every generation. He's not just the prophet of that time. When a a prophet that lived at one time and passed away, so he wouldn't. There'd be a new prophet, as we're going to see, for the next generation. But Eliyahu is somebody who we relate to, and in fact, there's a song about him that a lot of people sing after Shabbos about Eliyahu. And part of the reason is that it's brought down that he's going to announce the coming of the Mashiach. He's going to be the one to bring the good news. That's the that's a role that he was the major prophet that worked the hardest, so to speak, to bring the Jewish people back. And so when we're ready to come back, he's going to be the one to bring the announcement. And so that there's a Gemara which says that there's a mitzvah to believe that at any time the moment could come. Like, we don't really know when the redemption will come, but we have faith and we hope, you know, with that it could come whenever Hashem says it's time. We're game, we're ready to go. So the Gemara asks, well, what about Friday? You know, it could come any day. What about Friday afternoon? People are getting ready for Shabbos. So it implies that he wouldn't come Friday afternoon. And so right after Shabbos, that's why we sing Eliyahu, which means, like, now you could come. The other people say he could come Friday afternoon and he'll explain the Gemara, you know. There's interesting, in the Gemara, in many places, has Jews like to question, and that's part we're taught to question, and many times there's no answer. And whenever the Gemara doesn't have an answer, the Gemara uses the word teku. Teku is an expression that means Eliyahu will answer this one. Meaning, like, if there's a question that we know we've gone as far as we can go, we know we're not going to get any further, so we say teku. Let's leave it for Eliyahu. That's the it actually means Tishbi. Eliyahu was called Eliyahu's last name was Tishbi. Yeah, the Tishbi Yitartu Kashirai. The Tishbi, he'll answer all the questions. We're not supposed to let questions get in the way of doing what we need to do. There are a lot of questions in life. There are a lot of things we won't understand. But we go further, and we see you have a question. When the Messiah comes, he'll give you an answer. That's kind of it. Now, Tishbi Eliyahu will answer. Tishbi, Teku stands for Tishbi, which is Eliyahu. Yeah. The Tishbi, Yitartzu, will answer. Kasha is the difficulties, the bias, and the questions that we ask. Different kinds of questions. Tishbi, Yitartzu, the... It's very interesting how Eliyahu has taken on the role. The only thing is, we'll never really understand totally spiritual things. So when we talk about chariots of fire or whirlwinds, or we can guess, we can say what we think it means, but it's a spiritual metaphor. It's on a different kind of level. So we don't have an exclusive understanding of what these things mean, going up to heaven. You know, Eliyahu didn't die, he became an angel. We don't have an exclusive understanding of what that means. We have different themes. And we have different, we talked about before how Eliyahu is the one that comes to save the day when we're stuck, you know, and how different times, places, people feel that Eliyahu takes, he could be a non-Jew, or he's a messenger. So Hashem sends a messenger who's not expected to be there, that person could be Eliyahu. So that's the way it's brought down. So, Vahiba Alos Hashem, Hashem decided at a certain point that he was going to bring him up. He was going to take him up there. It could be that it was time for his... he had a disciple, Elisha. It was time for the disciple to take over. If you remember, Eliyahu himself had expressed frustration. He had tried to prevent the collapse of the northern kingdom, and it didn't work. as much as he tried, you know, Jezebel and Ahav, and it just didn't work. So now he didn't really accomplish his mission yet. So he would go back to heaven, and God will send him back down when we're ready, when he's ready to accomplish his mission. But it came time for him to go up. And this, the Hebrew word Bisara, he uses the word a whirlwind. Bisara, it's really not not so clear what that means, like a whirlwind. Anybody know what a whirlwind is? Is it like a, is that, what? It's like a tornado?
Tornado or... It's just a very fierce,
circular
wind.
Yes. A circular wind. Okay.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Except this would be in reverse if
you're
blowing up. Right.
Okay. So, Vayelech Eliyahu and Elisha min Gilgal. So Eliyahu and Elisha went to Gilgal. Now, it's an interesting thing. Eliyahu is leaving, and he has to make preparations to go. So... he's giving over the leadership to Elisha. So we don't really know. Again, these are spiritual things. We're not on the level of Elijah to know exactly what his business was and what he was doing. But if we were going somewhere and we were training someone to take over for us, so what would we do? Where would we go? He seems to take him to the places where the Jewish people started out. In other words, he takes him to Gilgal. That was the place where Yahushua came when he crossed over the Jordan, the Yarden. He seems to want to go to the different places that he was active, and I'm not sure if he's why exactly or what. There is an idea that there's spiritual energy in these places and that there's something to be gained from the experiences there. So. We're going to see, like, this last day, they're, like, running all around, like, you know, like, going from one place to another, and they must have made, like, very good time. Now, Eliyahu tells his disciple, you don't need to go with me. And he tries to, he says, verse 2, V'yama Eliyahu Elisha, shuvana po, stay here. I got work to do, you know, it's not necessary for you to come along. You stay. Now, by the way, shuvana is like, please, you know, if you say please, that means you don't have to. Like, you know, please, you know, it's not necessary. Keshem shochani ad Bezel, then he goes to Bezel. V'yama Elisha chai Hashem, achai nafshech himasveh. He says, by the life of God, I'm not leaving. I'm not going anywhere. So it's very interesting. Like, so we don't really know the nuances of it. It could be Eliyahu. The way I kind of read it was like, Eliyahu was saying, you don't have to trouble yourself, just please, you know, it's fine, you stay here. And he would say, oh, of course, I wouldn't miss this for the world, you know, like, because it's hard to imagine that he would go against his wishes. Some people say he was testing him, and we're going to see part of that test. He wasn't sure yet if Elisha was ready to assume the mantle of leadership. And by the way, we're going to see where that term mantle comes from. It comes from this chapter, the word, the mantle of leadership, the... with Yeshua, yes. Mm-hmm. So, but first he says, you know, you stay here. It's there is the idea also that a person has to want, you know, has to be ready for it. So, but Elisha says, and when a person swears, that means that they're going to carry through. And so he says he's committed. In other words, he says by the life of Hashem, and you know, Hashem's life means forever. This is forever. I'm with you forever. And I'm not going to leave you. Verse 3, Vayetzu b'nei ha-Nevi'im asher Bezel. Now, they had different groups that studied prophecy, different schools of prophets. And these schools of prophets, since they were prophets, they knew that they were coming. So they, like, came out to greet Eliyahu, to say goodbye, maybe, to some extent, there's an idea that their prophecy works if you have a major figure that Hashem speaks to. So it's like he opens a channel. And once you have that reception, other people can get reception. I know before we had internet, now we have our own internet, our neighbor had internet access, and we were able to use, in some of the rooms of our house, his internet access, right? Because once he paid for the channel, he opened the channel, you can put a password on it if you don't want him to. But if you don't have a password on it, you can use... So prophecy works like that also. In other words, Eliyahu was a subscriber, and because he subscribed to the prophecy, so to speak, the students around him were able to get prophecy as well. Now, once he wouldn't be there, so then The Hasidim, they buy into this in a big way. In other words, they feel that if they have a Rebbe who's, you know, got a subscription, that'll get them entrance into the world to come. That's like the, there's some truth to that concept that if you have a holy person, that some of that will, you know, if you're a follower of a person who's holy, and that some of that will carry on to you, or will, or you can get reception through that holy person or near that holy person. So these schools of prophets, though, they got their prophecy during the times of Elijah, because he was there to direct them, and he was there to show them how, you know, what the will of Hashem was. So now the prophets, they spoke to Elisha. Now, Elisha wasn't yet the leader. In fact, he was, as far as we know, he might have been, you know, very quiet. He had no leadership at all until this point. He was just another one of the disciples. He was with Eliyahu a lot. So they said to him, so they said, do you know that today's the day? So are you privy to that? Did you get that message? So he says, so I guess the idea was with prophets that sometimes Hashem spoke to them and sometimes they didn't. And so they were curious if he was privy to that. And he said, yeah, Gamani, I know that. Hechashush. Very interesting, like the shush. Hechashu. Hechashu means like... So there's a question, what's he shushing them? So it could be that you don't repeat bad news, like you don't say, if there's something that's, maybe it could still change, maybe Eliyahu will change his mind, maybe he'll stay a little longer. We don't like to announce it, like, you know, we try to keep it, maybe it's not meant to be public. We'll see that this happens a few times where people say, did you hear he's going, shh, you know, the question was, how was he going to take leave? Was it going to be like a large ceremony, or was it going to be quiet? What was it going to be like? And so he's kind of saying to them that this is going to be a quiet leaving. Could be that, it's interesting, it doesn't say he's going to die, it just says he's going to be taken, you won't have him as a master. But it says he's going to be taken as our teacher, we won't have him as a teacher anymore. First of all, Yomala Yelisha, Shubana Pokia, Hashem Shekhani. He says, now Eliyahu says to Elisha, you know, they just did one bit of traveling. If he had the map of Eretz Yisrael, you'd see, like, this is like big distances. They finally came to Bezel. So now Eliyahu says to him, now I got to go to Yericho, which is, that's a big, you know, big traveling. So again, he says, Chai Hashem, Chai Nefshei Imezvek, I'm not leaving you. So what was this other challenge over the earlier one? It could be that, you know, each place they went represented a certain kind of prophecy. You know, Jericho, Yericho was the first city of idolatry in Eretz Israel. That was the city that fell, that they went around seven times. And so these were different missions or different aspects of leadership. And so Eliyahu was saying, you know, Elisha, you don't need to do that. And he said, no, he's game. He's going to do the Bezel leadership, and he's going to do the Yericho leadership. He was going to take it all on. And we're going to see Elisha really, he's not afraid to take on the mantle. We're going to see, he actually asked for double, which is just interesting, you know, like there's the idea that we encourage people to go for it, so to speak. I had a Rebbe once. We were playing baseball, and when he came by, the boys like stopped and thought, maybe we should be playing baseball, maybe we should be studying. And he said, no, he said, hit a home run, you know. Once you do, he said, he wanted us to go. When you're doing something, he said, do it all the way. you're going to play baseball, hit a home run. If you're going to, you know, whatever you do, do well. You know, that's this idea like that. And so we're going to see Elisha seems to be that kind of, you know, his master says, oh, you don't need to go to Yerila. I'm going. I'm coming. You know, whatever Elio tries to see, if he, are you really up to it? You want to do that kind of, you know, he says, he's coming. So they came to Yericho. Five. Yagash Menei Neviim, and the prophets that were in Jericho, they come out. Elishama of Yomei Lavi Yadatim Kia Yomazah, and they see Elisha, and they say, "Did you know that today Lachas Ananam Naroshecha that our?" It's interesting the term, by the way, that our master is on our head. In English, they lose that. It says, take your master from you. But if you read the Hebrew, it says, Lokeach es adunecha mayal roshecha. I will take your master from upon your head. It means your head. He's our leader. He leads us. Like, just like Rosh Hashanah is the head of the year. It's the leader of the year. It sets the tone for the year. It begins the year. So the master, he's on your head. He's above you. He leads you. So that's being taken away.
Rabbi, in both cases where they come out to speak to him, they refer to Elijah as your master.
Mm-hmm.
They do not speak of him as our master.
Okay. I think he was one of the close inner disciples, for, you know, like the... He traveled with him, or he traveled close by. You would think that they knew that, certainly if he was a disciple, he would know, but I guess apparently they...
If he's going to die, then Elisha will become...
Right, right.
So, but they still differentiate between your master and not, they don't claim...
Right, right. Well, they were in a different city. In other words, Elisha traveled with Eliyahu at this time. If you remember, he said goodbye to his parents, and then he went. So he was traveling with him, but he said, you know, that it is interesting that they don't call him our master. There is an idea that it's a special like merit to be with a person when their soul leaves. Like, so to speak, like there's like a transfer of, really what we saw with Moshe Rabbeinu and Yehoshua, there was like a transfer it'd be there when the person, and it's, sometimes a person has that and sometimes they don't. In other words, as somebody I was close to didn't manage to be at, you know, when a close relative, and you know, their whole life they regretted it. Somehow, you know, at that moment they weren't there at the bedside or whatever. There's a certain, certainly with a teacher or somebody like Eliyahu, when they leave, so his jobs have to be, there's an idea that every generation has its leaders and that Hashem doesn't abandon us, and that when good people go, there'll be other people to take their place. One generation comes, one generation go. You know, that's the nature of it. And so, when a person passes away, it's the job of those that are remaining to take up the good things that person did, and to carry them. And so, there's an idea of being there in the hopes of getting the strength to carry on those good deeds, so to speak. So they were all saying to him, you know, you're the disciple. Do you know what's going to happen today? Are you ready for it? Are you ready for your master to leave? Which means, if you're there, that means that you will get some of that energy, or you will get that ability to carry on those types of things. So he says, yeah, gamani yada, same answer. And hechashu, shh, don't tell anyone. We're just guessing, really. Like I said, I don't know exactly what the deeper, you know, the code word or the Kabbalistic, but you could kind of guess. But like I'm saying, if somebody has another idea as to what exactly they were, you know, why they were asking and what they were telling him and what he was saying, it's just interesting. So this Elisha traveled with him twice, and now he tells him again, please stay where you are. Ki Hashem Shulchani Haryardena. Now, this time, his wording is a little different. Each time he says, I got to go somewhere else. He said, this time Hashem is sending me over the yarding. And so he says, Chai Hashem, Chai Nafshechi Mezveh. He says, no way, I'm game, I'm going with you. And the two of them go. Now, this time, verse 7, Chamishim Ishim Mnei Neviim. And 50 men from the sons of the prophets, they weren't on a level that they could be close with them, but they came, they followed closely by. Shem Amdu, and they were both by the yarding. This is like at Har Sinai, where Moshe and Aaron, they went up, and the elders, everybody could only go so close. In other words, they were on the... verse 8. Now the problem is, how do you cross the Yarden? The Yarden's a river. The Jordan, today it's much smaller because it's been dammed and they take the water away, but it was a big river. How do you cross it? If we say that the purpose in traveling with Eliyahu was to get the strength, the spiritual strength, to lead the Jewish people on different survival, different ways of survival, and different powers. So over here, Eliyahu is this final mission is to show how to cross the Yarden, how to split the sea. And so Eliyahu takes Elisha, and they go v'yaku esamayim, and they split the sea. V'yeksu heina v'heina v'yavishneim, and both of them walk through. Now, not only does the sea split, but they both walk through on the dry land. Now, this was visible for the other prophets to see that Elisha also was part of that miracle. V'yikav v'Eliyahu omer Elisha shol ma'eselach v'ter melach mi'imach. So over here, Eliyahu turns to Elisha. Now, he didn't ask this beforehand. Maybe he needed to see that the sea would split for Elisha also. Because, you know, we don't know what goes on in a person's heart. But he saw that Elisha, Hashem, also made miracles for Elisha. So he said, tell me, what can I do for you? What can I do for you before I'm taken from you? Now's your last chance. Ask, what can I do? Vayomer Elisha, Elisha says, Yina pishnayim berucha elai. He says, I want double. Isn't that great? He says he wants to be double what Eliyahu was.
It was ambitious.
It was ambitious, wasn't it? Right. But it's even interesting. He was asking for more power than Eliyahu. Some people say, what does it mean, double? That he was asking that Eliyahu be with him. That I want you to be with me, and this way I'll be double. It'll be you and me. I'll have the power. Because I had you as a master, and then I'll do my own things, and so you'll be with me. So having double means that you'll go along with me. I will carry you with me in the things that I do. That's what the double is. So let's see what Eliyahu says, verse 10. V'yomer hakshisa lishol. That's a tough one. How can you give more than you have, right? How can you a person asks for double or the but he doesn't say no. He says basically this is going to be up to Hashem. And you know, how will you know if you're getting double? So im tira osi, if you'll see me luchach mitach when I'm taken away from you yilach hakein, then it'll be true. Then you'll see if you're there. If you see me being taken, if you can see it, me going to heaven, so to speak, then your wish will come true. Im lav, imayin lo yeh. If not, it won't be. That's what Eliyahu tells him. So they're having this discussion. Vehi ahem ahochim holach bedaber, and they're like walking along and talking. Vehine, and in the middle of their talking, rechav esh, horses of fire, chariots of fire come. Vesusei esh, and horses of fire. The Afrida Ben Shenehem. And it gets kind of hard to talk to him because these fiery horses and chariots start separating them. The Yahu Eliyahu Besara Shemayim. And Eliyahu at this point goes up to the in the wind. He doesn't really climb on the chariot, but he goes up in the wind to the heavens. And Elisha witnesses it. Verse 12, and this is very traumatic for Elisha. Elisha, Roya Behu Mitzah. He sees and he calls out, Avi, Avi, Rechav Yisrael Uparashav. These words are often used when a great leader or important person passes away, or a person's family member. They use these words to describe the many times, our father, the chariot of Israel. What is a chariot? A chariot is like a tank in those days. Like if a person had a chariot, he was protected, and you didn't have to be afraid of the enemies because you know a chariot meant that you were strong, and you had the power of Egypt was their chariots and their horses. If you had the chariots and the horses, that meant that you were. We believe that our power comes from our righteous people. Our righteous people are better than a chariot, and so. He says, now this wasn't his father, but he calls him his father, because he was like a father to him. A father is the, you know, just like Hashem is our father, like he loves us and he cares for us. And so when Eliyahu was leading him, he says twice, Avi, Avi, you know, father, father. And then he says, Rechav Yisrael Parashav, you're like chariots. You protected the Jewish people. And perhaps that Hashem was even symbolizing that with the fiery horses. was symbolizing that Eliyahu was like a chariot, was like a was doing battle for the Jewish people. Below Ro'ot, and that was the end. You know, he went up to the heavens, and they didn't see him anymore. V'chazeh biga. Now, when a person sees is there, when a soul leaves him, they have to tear kriya. So he takes and the yikorem, he does kriya lishnayim kroim, and he makes two tears. He tears it into two. There's a whole discussion what kriya means. There's the idea that first of all, when a person leaves us, and so it's like they're torn from us. It's like we don't usually sew back what's torn. And there's the idea that it's a loss. You know, it's something that there's the idea though that our clothing is really not us. It's just clothing, and it clothes the body. So when a person dies, they really don't die. Their body dies, but their body is just clothing. It's a tear in the clothing, but the soul is eternal. And so it's true that there's a loss when somebody dies, but it's just a tear in the clothing. It's not the soul is eternal. We believe that a person has a neshama, and a neshama is a piece of Hashem, so to speak. Like Hashem breathed into each person's life. And Hashem is not a temporary thing. Hashem is eternal. It's all lasting. And a person can develop the holiness within themselves. Some people have it to a greater extent. The Shekhinah rests on some people, like Hashem resides in some people in a greater way. And other people, they deny that divine spark. And so it's a very small, covered up, but it's there. So the soul, the part of a person that's divine, that's good, and that lasts forever. That goes back to Hashem. It's not affected by a tear in the clothing. His body isn't here, but the godliness of that person and the goodness of that person, that carries on. And there is this idea that when a person did good things, that in some ways they sometimes become even more powerful after they die, because the things that they set into motion snowball, they increase. And that's like, so Eliyahu was able to give double. It means that because of all the good things that he did, and now he left a disciple who would continue, so it would be a double effect. It would be a increased effect. And so there are people that there have been some people that it was limited what they accomplished in their lifetime, but in later generations it grew and grew and became it snowballed. And so but he tears kriya of yarma sederes Eliyahu shenafama elof, and he picks up the mantle that had fallen off Eliyahu. The yeshiv yamnas fasiyar. Now, it's interesting. We don't know, like, nothing else fell down. Like, if Eliyahu went to heaven, I suppose there were more than the mantle that fell off. I mean, there was other clothes, there were shoes. Like, if he became a spirit, so all, you know, that. But this is more symbolic that he picked up the mantle. In other words, Eliyahu was leaving. Eliyahu didn't have it easy. He was on the most wanted list. He had to go out in the desert, and he was chased by kings, and prophets were never popular. They had to challenge, you know, when somebody did something wrong, the prophet had to go to them and tell them, and not everybody wanted to be a prophet. Later on, we're going to see Yirmiyahu gets thrown in the pit, you know, in the quicksand, and there were other prophets that were assassinated. Not everybody was willing to do that. But when Eliyahu dies, he picks up the mantle. He says that he's symbolic. That shows he's going to carry those things. People, you know, people are heirs, like, to, you know, they divide an estate. Somebody passes away, and so the children get together, and they say, well, you take this, and they'll take. But they're also supposed to divide a spiritual estate. In other words, they say, well, you know, the mother, father, they did these things, so who's going to take that over? You know, they did this kindness, they were involved in this. And so the kids have to, the same way they divide the spirit, the physical estate, you know, they take the, you know, this one gets the bank account, this one gets that, this one. So they have to divide the spiritual estate. They have to say, well, you know, our parents were involved in so many good causes and good things. Well, we got to take those over. We got to fill in their shoes. They got to pick up the mantle. They have to try to, it's not just the children, but other people as well that were disciples. They have to make sure that the good works that people do, that they're those that carry it on. Now, you know, who knows exactly who gets to pick up that mantle, but sometimes we're witness to that. There's some, you know, somebody's part of a committee and they leave and they're no longer able to carry on. Someone else has to pick up the mantle. It's someone else's time. But that's what Elisha does over here. He picks up the mantle that had fallen. You know, now it had fallen implies that, you know, that for the moment there was no one to do it. It was on the ground. And so he saw the opportunity. It was the chance to fit into the shoes, and he picked up. I think that was something from the Rosh Hashanah. They had like a mechitza thing there. He picked up. Thought maybe it was a mantle to pick up. I was talking about it. It was like a suction cup that was held up there. But anyway, so then he goes back to the Jordan. And he takes the mantle. And he uses the mantle. It works. It's almost like he has the magic. He takes the mantle and he hits it on the Jordan. And he says, where is the God of Eliyahu? Where is the spiritual strength of Eliyahu? Is it still here? Is it gone? Where is it? V'yakis amayim, it's the water, v'yakis, and it splits. V'nei over Elisha. And he passes through. And so he had never done this before. He never tried that. In other words, until now, he didn't have that power, this miraculous power. And it appeared for him. V'yiru b'nei neviim. And the other students were watching. And they said, Nacha ruach Eliyahu Elisha. Sometimes when people pass away or they divide, there's an argument over who should take over. There's big communities where they're divided because one wants this one to take over and that one to take over. So over here, the Hashem arranged that people should see that Elisha was going to take the mantle. And they bow down to him to the ground. Now, it's interesting, the other people weren't sure what to do. They know that Eliyahu was there, and now he wasn't. And they saw Elisha, so they said, you know what, let's do a search and rescue mission. Maybe if he went up in the whirlwind, maybe he got, just the way the wind takes a person up, it brings him down. And we all saw the Wizard of Oz, you know, it brings the house up, it's got to come down, right? So maybe Eliyahu came down somewhere. So Yelchon Ivash Asana, let's go do a search and seek mission. Pen Yinasu Ruach Hashem Yeshiva, and maybe he's on a mountaintop somewhere. Abachas Agias Yomer Lo Tishluchu. And so Elisha, though, understood that this was not a temporary thing. He understood it was final, and he said, no, it's not necessary. The Ifatibo, and they insisted. They said, no, we got to check. Maybe he's there. Maybe he needs us. Now, it's interesting. Elisha knew that they weren't going to find him. But sometimes you can't fight with everybody. There's limits to how far you could fight with people. It's also such a lesson to us. Like, sometimes somebody's going to do what's wrong, and you have to decide, is it really worth, like, you know, digging your hand and say, all right, they want to go search for him, let them search for him already. You know, I told them no. But sometimes you got to let people do what they want to do. You pick your battles. That's right. And that's a leader also. So he tried. He said, don't bother. And they said, oh, no, we need to go. The question I have is, did he say I told you so or not? They searched for 3 days, and they didn't find him. Verse 18, oh, he did say I told you so. Yeah. So he said, I told you not to go. Sometimes, I guess, you need to say... I guess he didn't want them to blame him that they spent all this time looking. He said, "No, I told you not to go." Verse Yotes V'yomer Anshe Yir Elisha Inei Na Moshe V'Yir Tov Kashe Adoni Ra. So Elisha, after again, it could be some time went by, not too long, but on his way back from the Eliyahu's going up to heaven, he comes to a city and. It's not clear why the people are giving him this speech, but apparently he asked them, what, you know, now that he was appointed like a leader. Again, a prophet is a very unusual type of a leader, but he understood that it was his job to help people. So he comes to the city and he says, how are things here? Is there something that you're lacking? I'm assuming he said that. And so their answer to him was, yeah, no, things here are pretty good, just like you see. You can see for yourself that things are pretty good. The only problem we got is Maima Royim. The water's bad. The Eretz Mishukhalas and the the water supply was not, the water wasn't good. It wasn't drinkable. It wasn't usable for irrigation. And that's the only problem we got here. Verse 20. Big problem, yeah, yeah. To this day, I think Israel is one of the leaders in desalination. I think they that's taking bad waters and converting them. The Yamakakulisua says, so he says, you know what, get me a new jug, Vesimu Shamelech, and put some salt in there, and Vikwe Lechem. Now, one of the things about prophets are you got to believe in them, and they did what they were told. They, you know, what's salt going to do? He went and got salt. Usually you take the salt out. Here he puts the salt in. Verse 28 says, "Motza Amay Vishu Shamelech V'yomer Kol Amar Hashem Rafisi L'Mayim Ha'Ela." He said, "Thus says Hashem, this water will be healed. It will be come drinkable. Lo Yia Misham Od Mavet. There should no longer be people dying and people miscarrying from these waters." And from that day on, verse 22 of Yifam Amayim Ada Yom Azeh. And from that time on, the waters of Kedvar Elisha Asher Diber. So that's amazing. Like, this is a huge miracle. Like, he changes the water supply. Now, you know, since, you know, we're talking about, you know, mystically, you know, bad waters is always a metaphor, you know, for, you know, the Torah is not, it's sometimes for Torah, sometimes for life, something, sour grape, something was wrong here, and he healed it. And then this question is, what is the symbolism of it? He said, you just need a little salt. You know, you just need a little, what does salt do? It brings out the flavor. It preserves things. But he prays, and he sees that he has to help these people, and he does. It's an amazing miracle. That's a huge benefit. Now, what we're going to see is, you might think that when you do something good, that everybody's going to love you. Believe it or not, no matter what you do, sometimes there are people that aren't happy with you. You know, you think they should thank you, and instead you're going to find people that, you know, it's a surprising thing in life. Sometimes you think you can't imagine why somebody wouldn't be happy with what you've done, and they find something to. So sure enough, somebody's not happy with him. V'yal Misham Bezel, who all as he's leaving the city, Narim Katanim Yotzim in the ear. V'yakosu, there are a bunch of kids coming out. Hoodlums, you know, young kind of people that are cursing him out. V'yakalsubo, v'yoma, ale kerecha, get out of here, bald man. Now, they made fun of the fact that apparently he was bald. It's not clear if he actually was bald or that. The Mephoshim say that they were the water carriers, and they used to make money bringing in the water from other places. Oh. So they didn't like that, you know, he ruined a good thing for them. But he wasn't good for the business, so they said, please leave, you know, get out of here. That's a terrible thing when you want to take advantage of people for your own benefit. And that's what these, I don't know why, in my translation, he calls it little boys. And the Hebrew is Na'arim Katanim doesn't necessarily mean little boys at all. We have, you know, Yitzhak at the Akedah is called a Nar. He was 37, you know, so it's a... it usually means people that are small-minded. Narim or, well, Narim Katanim, like, if it says Nar and it says cotton, so what are Narim Katanim? Like, small, not like small-minded or small people that were only thinking of themselves. Also, the idea is that they, you know, he helped the city, and they just go and they make fun of him, they abuse him. That's not the way a Jewish city should be. So Yifan Achrav, and he turned behind him, and Yerim, and he sees them, he calls him B'Shem Hashem, and he curses them, and takes his time do him in the ear, and the bears come out, and the bears attack them, and it's also like a miraculous kind of thing, and the prophet sometimes, it's not always good. It's not always easy work. Sometimes you have to punish evildoers also. This was a sign from Hashem. And he went back to Shomron after this.
Cursing him in the name of the Lord, that's something we don't hear very often.
No, that's right. Apparently he was showing that Hashem was angry with them. Other people say he looked at them to see if they had any good qualities. That's what happened. So we're going to break for a little while, Mirtz Hashem, because next week is the... it's interesting, there's just 4 days between Yom Kippur and Sukkot. And the Medrash says that... it asks a question. It says it's called Sukkot. It's the first day that you can sin. because, and the Gemara says, what do you mean? Once Yom Kippur is over, you could start. And it says you're too busy in between Sukkot and Yom Kippur and Sukkot getting ready. You don't even have time to sin. And so, then we'll be off for Sukkot. And then the first Monday after Sukkot, I'm just coming back from New York, Mr. Shemker.
Right.
We're making it happen, Mr. Shemker. So we'll start the following Monday, which...
The 31st, I think it is.
Well, actually, the 31st, I won't be here either. It'll be the week after the 7th, I think. So I'll make sure they know in the office. And I want to wish everybody a Gemara Ksima Tova, and everybody should just be inscribed in the book of life, and we should just share Simchas Mitzvah Hashem.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.